IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
I'm Kyle Devitt, and I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross, and this is a special Thanksgiving edition of the Inside the Cross podcast. I just wanted to highlight some of the important developments in the lacrosse world, and there's no better person to do that with than IL Women's Editor Hallie Quillen-Griggs. Hallie, welcome to our show that we somehow convinced people to let us make.
The Thankful Podcast. I for one, am very thankful to be on the show. Always a pleasure chatting with you, kind of the IL Podcast King. So I felt very honored that you asked. I think actually I asked you, but I'll just say that you asked me. Happy to chat some developments in lacrosse this year.
Somewhere someone just turned the podcast off because you referred to me as a king. But we are IL North, hashtag IL North, you and I together. Hallie, women's lacrosse underwent a big transition in 2018, kind of blazing the trail throughout the lacrosse world by instituting a shot clock well before it was approved in the men's game. Two different professional women's leagues emerged as well, mirroring events that would transpire later in the year in the men's pro game. They've also taken active steps to simplify and change the traditional rules in an effort to hasten the arrival of women's lacrosse in the Olympics, also well before the men's arm of U.S. lacrosse. Basically, what we learned from the women's game is that they are ahead of the curve compared to their male counterparts. Hallie, what was your favorite development in the women's game in 2018?
You know, you said it right there. I love that women are leading the way. I think that the men's game is in for a due awakening. The shot clock was fantastic in the women's game. We saw it hit the Division I ranks 2 years ago. It made its way to the D2 and D3 ranks last year. It changed the game, but it remained the same at the same time. You know, a lot of the players and the coaches that I've spoken to, certainly I've watched a lot of lacrosse in that time as well. It didn't change the majority of the game. What it changed was those final, 10, 15 minutes in championship settings. And I think we can all agree that makes for a better championship for the players, the fans, everybody watching. And I think in particular, the passerby fan, you have a mom or a dad or an aunt or an uncle, or maybe a young kid that's interested in the game, doesn't know much about it, and they're wondering why it's not moving faster. So I think that the women's lacrosse, hats off before I talk about my favorite development. You have to give a hats off to the women's NCAA rules committee within the IWLCA, of course, U.S. lacrosse as well, for just simplifying the rule book, removing a lot of the gray area and making this game just more exciting. But I think you touched on it a little bit. My favorite development this year on the women's side, how about Team USA, the women's team, really trailblazing the Olympic movement right now. UNC head coach Jenny Levy, she's the new head coach of the new look U.S. national team. I think that she's uniquely positioned to lead the way and to lead the charge into her Olympics, given her knowledge of how the women's national soccer team kind of has been leading the way for, in my opinion, women's sports at the national team level. Her husband is a prominent sports agent. He's represented a lot of the top U.S. women's soccer players. You think of a big name. He has either represented them in the past or currently does. So I think just her knowledge of seeing women's soccer make its way into the Olympics, make its way from really a national team program that had a dream about 20 years ago and is now the most visible women's team in the world. So who better to lead that movement on our women's lacrosse front than her? I think that she, just the way that North Carolina plays, how she feels about these new rules, she loves that lacrosse is faster than it's ever been. Her and her staff are really working with the FIL, working with U.S. lacrosse. They are so open to not only constantly giving their feedback about potential new rules, but using the national team really as the guinea pig to test them out. We saw that at the IWLCA President's Cup. Team USA, they had their white-blue scrimmage, and then they played all-star teams from the UWX, the WPLL. The game was faster. It looked very different. At times, it looked a lot more like basketball than it did traditional women's lacrosse. And we're not saying that those are the rules that are going to be played at the FIL level or that are going to be played in the Olympics. But I think when you've got such high-level players, the best players in the world, to have at your disposal to see, hey, yeah, does 6v6 work? Should we hold this player behind the line? Should we eliminate the draw control? It's a good place to start, and I really enjoyed watching this team lead the way in 2018.
One of the things I want to follow up on you with is the two women's pro leagues, right? You have the UWLX and the WPLL. What is the difference between those leagues? Because I'm known as the pro guy, the sailor hat I wear at Inside Lacrosse for the men's side, but I haven't really covered a lot of women's professional lacrosse. What is the difference between those two leagues for someone on the outside looking in?
I think that UWLX, United Women's Lacrosse League, that started first. And then a number of women who were behind kind of the initial growth of that league, they started Pro Women's Lacrosse, the WPLL. I've definitely been asked this question a lot. What's the difference? I think overarching before I start, you just have to say, these women have more opportunities than ever before. So I think as a sport, I'm thankful that if you have a dream to play professional women's lacrosse, that's attainable. That's attainable for the four teams in the UWLX and the five in the WPLL. I think what we saw last year, the WPLL has more of a feeder program. They do have a youth component involved, a kind of a leadership development program where they are developing the pros of tomorrow. I think from their side, they do have a lot of the top level players. Taylor Cummings is in the league last year. Marie McCool was the league's inaugural season MVP. Dana Dobby. And then the UWLX last year, the likes of Michelle Tumalo, Molly Hendrick teaming up, Alyssa Murray to lead Philly to the championship. Some of those players from the UWLX have confirmed to move over to the WPLL, which I think is just more exciting. UWLX, they have a few more positions to fill this year for college grads or women looking to get back into the pro ranks or into the pro ranks for the first time.
I'll follow that with the obvious follow-up. Why? And then I get this on the men's side as well. Why are there two professional women's lacrosse leagues?
I don't know if I'm in a position to answer that question. I think we would have to maybe this is part one of a podcast. Part two, we can ask that question to some members of those leagues.
Oh, that was a very diplomatic answer. I think part of it goes back to something that I think is actually really important in women's lacrosse, and that's the brand transition from the manufacturers. As I said, I wear a bunch of hats here, but the main one is gear and lifestyle editor at IL. And as a result, I work with a lot of manufacturers, and their focus in that space, in the women's space, has shifted over from not really paying as much attention to it as you may think to almost a full shift to we need a women's line. The mesh pocket change may not have had the impact that I think a lot of them expected it to have. But what it did do was open the doors to new manufacturers like, East Coast Dyes and String King to develop their own presence in the women's market. And then you have Brine basically transitioning into a full women's line under the New Balance umbrella while Warrior takes the men's hard goods side and New Balance does soft goods for both. I think one of the most important developments there is Kylie O'Miller signing with New Balance and being the face of this Brine campaign. And to me, she is the most exciting women's player to watch. The campaign they ran with her trademark eye black application is reminiscent of Mikey Powell, both aesthetically and tonally. And I think it works so well to draw people of both genders into that side of the women's game. What did you think? I know you kind of worked where you're working a little bit on that campaign right now with us. What was your impressions on that?
You know, I do have to agree. I love watching Kylie O'Miller play. I love her story. You know, what a better kind of example of the underdog story and how far you can go than Kylie O'Miller. Here's a kid, Long Island player, heavily under-recruited out of the high school ranks. She's lucky enough. Joe Spallina gives her a chance. She comes to Stony Brook, and she does things that, in my opinion, have just never been done before. Not only is she the NCAA's all-time leader in points and assists, but she broke those records, making it look really, really cool. I can't remember a player, men's or women's, that has been on SportsCenter more than Kylie O'Miller has the last few years. You know, she's the type of player that she'll rack up 7, 8, 9, 10 points a game, but you'll remember every point. You know, she's not the player that racks up points and at the end of the game you're like, oh wow, she had 10 points. There's nothing quiet about her game. It's behind the back passes, between the legs. She's tiptoeing around the crease, dancing out there. And I think for brands, looking at what Kylie O'Miller has been doing the last couple of years, you know, she's Stony Brook's first time to Wharton finalist, and then she did it again. Salivating, waiting for her to get athletes and, you know, potentially their grasp. And Brian New Balance, they were the lucky ones to swoop her up. She was the number one draft in the WPLL. She had a great rookie season. You know, she is the face of the Warp product right now. I think that she would have had an even stronger WPLL season. You know, she underwent knee surgery after that. So, you know, she's playing on a bum leg, still putting up the numbers that she did. And sneakily, you know, I think Brian New Balance, they also did a great job. They picked up Marie McCool too. So they not only picked up, you know, the, in my opinion, kind of the face of the college game the last couple years, they also picked up, you know, the dual threat end-to-end MVP in the midfield, Marie McCool. So they've got the flashy attacker. They've got the end-to-end force. Probably if you think of the two players that will lead this next national team movement to the next World Cup, they've got them both. So I think they did a great job. Then you look at the rosters that STX has, you know, the excitement of Michelle Tumalo, Alyssa Murray, Liz Hogan, you know, Kayla Trainer, obviously still the face of Nike, Taylor Cummings, Alex Oss, they do a great job representing Under Armour. I just think as a whole, again, we talk about 2018 being the year of women's lacrosse leading the way. I love that the brands are allowing these women to lead their way too.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I think that the newer manufacturers are really getting on board because the gear effect with men's lacrosse is really dependent on middle school and, you know, early high school players with that kind of eye towards gear. I think companies have been missing out on tapping into that market with the women's side. I don't think that the mesh, the ability to use mesh in the stick is the thing that changed that. I think that by and large, the attitude of, oh, well, girls don't care about the colors in their stick. They don't care about having 10 sticks. That might be true to a certain extent compared to the really obsessive, and I'll say it because I'm one of them, nerdy way that guys might treat their sticks or collect their sticks. But I think that the opportunity is there to bring in that aspect to the women's game. And if that hits, if the right product comes out, and, you know, you mentioned the Warp on the women's side, I think that that could be one of those products that really impacts the women's game. I think that if that comes through and you have stringing become more than just like, I mean, I don't know if you ever strung women's stick, but it is not fun. It is not good. I mean, not that it's not fun. It's not easy at all. I mean, anyone that tells you they can string a women's stick easy is lying to you. It's not an easy prospect with modern geometry of women's heads. You have to know what you're doing. And I actually just strung a couple women's sticks like last week. And I was like, oh my God, I'm just making mistake after mistake after mistake. What am I doing? And I've been stringing for 15 years. So I think that once that comes through and that cool factor kind of filters over, that's only going to get bigger. And it already has filtered over to a certain extent. It's only going to get bigger. And I'm excited to see that. I think you're going to see new products at LaxCon this year that are specifically geared to the women's game. I think you're going to see a lot more of a focus on that moving forward from all of these companies. But Hallie, you mentioned something earlier about the Team USA versus all-star teams and doing the white-blue scrimmage. Can you talk a little bit more about that occurred at the IBLCA?
Yeah, you know, once again, I'm just so excited that our national team had these professional level players to play against. You know, we've seen how much it's helped our men's national team prepare for the World Cup. You know, the pro all-stars have always traditionally given the men a run for their money, if not beaten them. And we saw that this past weekend. The WPLL all-stars, they were playing those potential FIL Olympic rules, potential Olympic rules. It was a short-sided game, no draw controls, quarters instead of halves. It was, you know, I think it was 6v6, including goalie, 5v5 on the field, only one defender held back. It was a brand new look game. So it's hard to kind of take out, oh, the WPLL almost beat Team USA in the traditional sense. But in the new look game, it was close. I like it. And I think that as whether you're a U.S. lacrosse or FIL employee looking to see, you know, what these rules mean, I think in many regards, you did see the new rules level the playing field. You know, I know the push for the Olympics, it's supposed to, you know, it's really, they need to ensure that everyone has a chance to compete. You know, are they leveling the playing field? I don't really like to think of it as leveling the playing field because I think there's a lot of talent out there. I think they're looking for a game that people can flip through and instantly watch. And if they're not an avid lacrosse fan, they'll be able to grasp pretty quickly. I think that they're looking for men's and women's lacrosse to meet somewhere in the middle. So when they put lacrosse in the Olympics, those two games look similar, if not the same. I don't think they'll look identical, but they're going to look similar because, you know, if you have, you know, we were interviewing a lot of coaches down at the IWLCA convention. We interviewed about 20 coaches altogether, Division 1, 2, and 3. All of those videos will come up on IL Women throughout the calendar year. We've got a lot of content I'm really excited about. But one interview, I love interviewing him, Adelphi head coach Pat McCabe. He was the last interview of the weekend, kind of like a mic drop there. This was the last question we spoke about. And he said, you know, one of the last Olympics, I got really into curling. And he said, "My, you know, my wife was laughing at me, and but it was, I just happened to be flipping through one day and curling was on. And then I got really into it. I was flipping through and trying to find curling the rest of the Olympics to kind of keep track and keep tabs on the men and women I was watching." And he said, "That's where lacrosse is not right now and needs to be." He said, "Only a lacrosse fan really watches lacrosse games. You know, they seek out the women's and men's games on ESPN, ESPNU. They seek out the games that are streamed from their conference. Now you have Big Ten Network, ACC Network, but primarily the people that are watching those games are lacrosse fans." He said, "Getting lacrosse into the Olympics gets us to that next level of just the passerby Olympic fan. They're going to watch this game. And now they're going to be watching the best players in the world play this game." So, you know, he said, you know, if lacrosse can get into the Olympics, it's a no-brainer. But what's that going to look like? We don't know. We've got time. You know, they're saying LA Games, 2028. So we certainly have a lot of time. But I think just for lacrosse to get into the Olympics and for us to see what happened last weekend, it was just really exciting for the sport.
I'm going to share an unpopular opinion about lacrosse in the Olympics. I am not up for the turning of lacrosse into rugby sevens. And by that, I mean not the rule set of turning into rugby. I mean, rugby traditionally is played with far more players, but there is a version of it called rugby sevens where it's just seven on seven in a rugby format. If you do that in lacrosse, I think for men's or women's, I think you need to change the goal, and if you change the goal, then you change the game and you have to change all the rules. And I don't know if I can get past that yet. I see the value in it. I understand that being in the Olympics is important. But part of what I think McCabe was saying, and something I'll agree with, is we need to have the sport on at a time and a place and a channel that someone will flip through. You know, so it needs to be on a mainstream network. It's funny, you have all these abilities to watch TV different ways. You don't have to have you can't even use rabbit ears on your TV anymore, but a lot of people still depend on broadcast television for everything. And I think that until lacrosse gets there, which I don't know if doing a different format gets it there, to be honest with you, because I don't know what the perfect ratio of goals to defense is. I'm not going to pretend to know that. I just can't separate myself enough to change the game to that extent just to get in the Olympics. I understand it's important, but I don't know if it comes at the expense of what we know as lacrosse. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if I believe in that. And this is an argument I've had with publisher Terry Foy, IL publisher Terry Foy, many, 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 many times, because he is very pro-Olympics. And I don't know if I'm ready to change the rules. Did you have any pushback like that after these games last weekend?
You know, definitely. It's funny. Kyle, I know a lot of people in our office don't always agree with you. I typically do, though. And I think for this podcast sake, I'm going to again take that stance. I agree. You know, there were a lot of coaches, and I'm excited for everyone to see these interviews, particularly when we were asking a lot of these coaches about their thoughts on lacrosse in the Olympics. You know, coaches like Karen Corbett at Penn and Kirsten Kimmel at Duke, they were very much of the same mindset. I would love to see lacrosse in the Olympics. I don't want to see our game drastically change to get there. We think we have a pretty cool game. And I think if you see the changes that the women's game, if you look at the changes the women's game has made in the last 3 years, let alone the last 20, I mean, we've made so much progress. It would be nice to see if we could get in without drastically changing the rule book. 6v6 was on the field last weekend. What about 10v10? I think if we can keep the draw, I think the draw makes women's lacrosse very exciting. And I think the possession clock gives teams a chance that don't necessarily dominate the draw. So I agree. You know, I want to give lacrosse its best chance to grow all over the world. I think the Olympic platform will get it there faster than ever. I just don't want to lose our game to get there.
Right. And I think, you know, not perfect example of this, but somewhat of an example of this. Last night I went to play pickup and it's holiday week, so you would think people would be there. No, the opposite. A lot of people didn't show up. We didn't have any goalies. So we flipped the goals over and you had to hit the pipe to score a goal. And as soon as I saw that no goalies were there, I started packing my stuff. And I was like, all right, I drove all the way here. I got to play. But if I hadn't just driven all the way there and it was like a half hour away, I would have left, because it's not the same, right? It's not the same game. It's a different, you know, objective. We didn't let long poles play. I wanted to play with a short stick. So people are running through. It's not the same. You know, it doesn't feel the same shooting on a pipe as opposed to a goalie. You know, and if you change stuff so fundamentally, I'm not saying that they're going to do that for any sort of change that they would make for the Olympics, but it's just an example of what I played last night wasn't really lacrosse. Like, it was, but it wasn't. And I don't want people to say that, you know, about Olympic lacrosse, oh, it's not real lacrosse. Like, that's what I would be most worried about, because I don't think that they're right when they say that. Like, I still had fun. Like, for example, I still had fun running around and playing last night just to have the ball and the stick and run around. But it's not the same. And I think that's something that everyone needs to consider. I think that there's a little bit of the Olympic blinders on for people that are gung-ho about it. I think they need to, like, pause and maybe not go all the way down to six people. Maybe like eight. Like maybe just take two away, try that, fix the goal, shorten the field. I understand you have to do that. And I know that lacrosse costs a lot of money to field the team. The women's side is a little bit cheaper, but it's still not cheap to have that many people in a team sport internationally. So I think there needs to be a consideration there as well. One thing I wanted to not hint at, more like tease it. We have a big project coming up on the gear side that I can't really talk about, but it's mostly men's equipment related. And I wanted to have a women's presence in it because I think that's integral to the growth of both sports. Men's and women's lacrosse are intrinsically linked. And I don't think that it's a bad thing that schools are more inclined to add women's lacrosse instead of men's first because of cost and Title IX at the collegiate level. I'll admit, I definitely used to think the opposite when I was coaching because when you're in the moment, it's hard not to think about your kids on your team and how it affects them. But I realize now that having women's lacrosse first is a great building block for any administration. I mean, let's look at the women's lacrosse graduation rates. They're at 96% graduation for Division I. Only hockey, gymnastics, and skiing have a higher percentage of women's sports, and it's by one percentage point at 97%. Men's lacrosse at the Division I level is at 88%, which is still higher than like football, which is 77%, but it also costs more than double. Football also costs more than double what a men's lacrosse team would cost. And I think that what most people point out is that you can't have a men's lacrosse team if you have a football team because of all of the men involved and because of Title IX. I don't think that's true. Can you kind of elucidate a little bit more on what Title IX's role has been lately in women's lacrosse and what people kind of get wrong about it?
You know, I think I'm trying to think how I say this without making people mad.
I do that every day. It's great.
True. I'm not you, though. I don't like when people are mad at me. Women's lacrosse has benefited tremendously from universities attempting to remain Title IX compliant. You know, I think where women's lacrosse in particular has benefited, say, more than, you know, you mentioned a women's gymnastics or a small roster sport is in its scholarships. You know, women's and men's lacrosse are both between the 12 to 13 range scholarships, if you're a fully funded program. That's huge, and I think that that's what sets women's lacrosse apart. It's a pretty big roster size, large scholarship number as it compared to many women's sports. When you look at adding women's lacrosse, it checks so many boxes, and you don't have to build an ice rink. You don't have to renovate a swimming pool. You don't have to build a diving platform. You know, you likely have soccer. You probably have field hockey. You have football fields. You have fields you can throw lacrosse on, put lines on. As you mentioned, it does not incur too big of a cost, albeit I know that all of these sports definitely drive cost to universities and athletic programs. But then I think coupled, you look at that graduation rate. That rate is so strong, and it's so indicative of the type of student athletes that women's lacrosse is bringing in. So when you look at a 96% graduation rate, it checks your Title IX boxes, and it really is the fastest growing sport. I mean, women's lacrosse is the fastest growing sport in the country at the youth level and at the college level, and that's exciting. You know, I think it's close to 25% growth rate in the last 10 years. That's huge, and I don't think that's stopping. I will say I wish that men's lacrosse was at that trajectory. You know, you see women's lacrosse ushered in the Pac-12 last year. How great would it be for the men's Pac-12 conference? I'm waiting for women's lacrosse in the SEC. You know, we have Florida, we have Vanderbilt. Let's get the rest going. When I graduated from Syracuse, one, we were still in the Big East. Two, the Pac-12 was so far from ever being a reality. I think the only programs that were around, Cal, Stanford, and Oregon, you know, we've seen so many programs add to make it a possibility. But yeah, you know, I think I know I'm probably not adding as much color as you can on the topic, but, you know, I admit that women's lacrosse, it would be not, we would not have experienced the growth had it not been for Title IX. But I don't look at that as a negative. I think that schools, yes, they need to remain compliant, so they're looking for a women's sport, but I think women's lacrosse just looks that much more attractive than a lot of the other options out there. And now, especially, you know, with the rules changes, with the increased exposure, now this is the best version of the sport than it's ever been, in my opinion.
Well, let's transition over it and kind of go into 2019, right? Do you think that the emergence of a team like BC, like Navy last year, is going to happen again with those same teams? Or do you think there's going to be, you know, new contenders in the Division I space?
It's funny. I spoke to Shelly Claes-Balcombe at JMU about this last year. And she was saying, she's like, you know, Boston College, but really Navy. Like, Navy was the shining star of 2017. You know, Boston College, yes, they were kind of, you know, they flipped the script on saying uncle in the ACC, but they were an ACC school that had a lot of success in years past. I mean, you look at the likes of Michaela Ricks and Covey Stanwyck, you know, they've had their slew of All-Americans, Sarah Manley, a Towerton finalist. But for Navy to make that run in 2017, I think that that was the alarm to all of the other, you know, everyone uses the term mid-major or non-power conference teams. I think that was the, you know, the alarm was going off. If they can do it, why can't it be us? And that's what Coach Claes-Balcombe said. She's like, you know, when Navy made that run in 2017, I think that our girls really realized that can be us too. And JMU, you know, I did a lot of the Lex Sports Networks games last year for the CAA, so I saw them play a lot. And when the – I'm not saying that, you know, I thought they were going to take a run at the championship. You know, for staff picks, I did not pick them. I actually picked North Carolina. But anyway, last year when the bracket came out for Selection Sunday, there were so many naysayers all over Twitter. You know, how did Stony Brook not get the number one seed? And how is JMU seeded in the top four? You know, you look at their schedule, they had one loss to Maryland, the reigning champs, and it was a close game. And then they had wins over North Carolina, wins throughout the rest of the season. So JMU, I think from day one, they're a team that doesn't need a chip on their shoulder because they play with one anyway, because that's the way their coach had them play. And I think that the minute they heard the naysayers crawling out from under the rocks on Selection Sunday, that was just enough fuel to their fire. And the way that Navy motivated teams after their 2017 run, what a better motivation than JMU last year, kind of getting, rallying the troops, and really now everyone, it's just wide open. You know, heading into this year, everyone's talking about this is the year of Boston College. They've got Sam Apuzzo back, Dempsey Arsenal back, Kenzie Kent back after taking a year off. You know, they have the reigning National Defender of the Year, Elizabeth Miller, back. So a lot of people are talking about them, but just because what we've seen the past 2 years in the women's game, just in the D1 ranks, I mean, Lemoyne was a first-time champ in the D2 ranks last year. But I think if you look at the D1 game, what we learned over the past 2 years is that there is no sure bet. And just because you are ranked number one in the beginning of the year certainly doesn't mean you'll be number one at the end of the year or any week throughout. And I think that that's what's so exciting about the women's game right now and why I'm already so excited for 2019.
Hallie, I think that is a great place to wrap this up and bring it in for a landing, as they say. One last thing. What are you most thankful for going into from 2018 going into 2019?
Most thankful for? You know, I am just – that's a I feel like I should have prepared a better answer, being that this is our Thanksgiving somewhat women's podcast. but I feel a little on the spot. I think I'm just most thankful for the excitement that the game brought us last year. As you mentioned, we had two professional leagues. I think the new look Team USA, just really tryout process, now that it's more of an invitation process and you're getting a feel for these girls, the excitement of the D1 and D2 first time champs, but also Gettysburg putting their foot down and saying, no, we'll run the table back to back. I think that's the most exciting part. You can't really pinpoint what the best game of the year was or the brightest moment. And I think for that, I'm just very thankful. And now I have to turn it back. What were you most thankful for?
Yeah, I'm most thankful for the chaos that is coming in 2019. I think it's going to be...
Of course you are.
It's going to be so great. Two women's pro leagues, two men's pro leagues, all these transfers in men's D1, the women's game. I covered one women's game my whole life. I believe it was because someone was ill. It was the semifinal, I think 3 or 4 years ago. It was one of my first things I did for IL as a full-time staffer. I covered Northwestern Maryland. And I walked away from that game being like, women's lacrosse needs a shot clock. And also, I don't understand women's zones on defense at all. But I think that was a really impactful moment for me, kind of going like, okay, I really don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't understand this at all. And I've tried to watch women's games as a result and try to get my knowledge up, talk to you about it a little bit. I think that the talent in the women's game is better than it's ever been. And I think that's just a layman's perspective. You could say I'm wrong, but the offensive talent that's come out in the last, I want to say 3 years, is unbelievable. And it's so much fun to watch. Like I said, Kylie O'Miller, my favorite player to watch. Marie McCool is amazing. Taylor Cummings, amazing. Just the sheer athleticism and ability. The thing that I'm going to say, because I like to say things to upset people, but also I think it's true. Women's lacrosse is harder to play than men's lacrosse. And if you don't think that's true, I kind of think you're dumb and you're not paying attention. It is way harder to play women's lacrosse than men's lacrosse. And I think that's a great note to end on. Maybe something for someone to consider when they listen to this podcast. Have a little bit more respect for that side of the game because we are linked. And I've said a couple times that I don't think they're the same sport, but there's so many similarities. You can't say that they're not. It's just that the rules are different. And you have to respect it. And I definitely do. Hallie, I respect everything that you do at IL, your many jobs, your many hats as well. And I think that you crush it in 2018. And we are all going to crush it going into 2019. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Let us know what you're thankful for in one of the posts that we have coming up on InsideLacrosse.com. And if you like this podcast, tell a friend, leave a rating. And we will catch up with you guys in the next one.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.